All right, everybody, welcome back to Off the Grid on the Record, the show where we sit down with people building what's next in clean tech, smart infrastructure, and intentional living. Today's guest, I have the honor to be sitting with Jesse Russell, CEO and founder of Hiatus Homes and managing partner at Hiatus Capital Fund. Based in Bend, Oregon, Jesse and his team are leading the charge in small home development with a twist. They're not just designing minimalist, energy-efficient homes, they're creating entire cottage communities rooted in sustainability, simplicity, and long-term value. In the episode, we get into the real-world impact of building smarter, smaller, and more sustainable from zoning and investing strategy to community dynamics and shifting buyer psychology. So let's jump in. Hey, Jesse, thanks so much for hopping on today. Excited for this one. Where are you joining us from?
I'm over in Bend, Oregon right now. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. No, I just, I've been reading up on Hiatus and really love how you guys are bridging the whole area of real estate design and sustainability. There aren't many builders thinking about both, you know, architecture and community in quite the same way. So give us a bit of a background on how that all started and I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I'm Jesse Russell. I'm the founder of Hiatus Homes. And we're a development company. As I said, we're based in Bend. We really focus on building small, sustainable housing, things like cottage communities, some backyard ADUs, just real infill housing that kind of fits into the existing neighborhoods. And, you know, over the past years, we've worked directly with these different housing models and policies that are behind them to try to be able to do a lot of infill housing and really help with affordability in Bend. And now we're doing projects all over the state and a couple of projects. We have one in DeLand, Florida, one in Helper, Utah. So we've been expanding quite a bit since we started. We started out as tiny house on wheels developers. I grew up in Bend, went to the University of Oregon. I got my degree in journalism. And then after college, I ended up in Los Angeles where I worked as a reality TV producer. And after a really long time of doing that, I just got kind of sick of being in LA and wanted to try to get back up here to Bend. And part of my job when I was working in TV is I'd go around to networks and pitch houses. And I was pitching some concepts to this network that had just picked up a series called Tiny House Nation. And I had realized I'd never even seen tiny houses before. And I went back to my office and I looked them up and I would just immediately thought it would work here in Bend. So sold everything I had and I moved back and built the very first tiny house in my friend's backyard and have just been doing that ever since.
That's fantastic. So I'm assuming nowadays with all the scale and all the new projects that are coming in, can you kind of walk us through what made you say that we can do this differently? Like we can really turn the market upside down and give it something that it's never really seen before.
Yeah, well, one of the big things, for housing in most cities is the zoning laws. And the zoning laws were passed a long time ago. And a lot of those in residential standard zones, they only allow for, one house on one lot. And in Bend and other places, you'll see that like there's a lot of room on those lots. And as affordability became an issue, what made sense to us is just to build smaller houses. We'd started out as tiny house on wheels developers, and then we're looking to just try to do a little community of these houses on a lot. And the current zoning at that time wouldn't allow it. It was illegal to put the houses on there. And then Bend has always been really kind of ahead of the game on all this stuff. And in 2015, they adopted what was called the cottage code, and that allowed for much smaller units on smaller lots. You had to have a common area that the units shared. One of the other cool things was that you could face the units into these common areas instead of on the street. So that was our first project. They were on foundations. They were fee simple lots that, you could sell to someone. And at the time, we had the least expensive house on the market. And that was a great project. There were 22 cottages and people would walk into those homes and they'd look around and they'd go, oh, my God, it's way bigger than I thought. I could live in this place. We always cared about efficiency, too, and the environmental impacts of building. So even in that first development, we were really trying to do, a net zero home. And one of the first things you can do to make your house efficient is to make it smaller. So our houses at that time were about 500 square feet. We would air seal them. And at that time we were just using, basically someone at framing, would caulk, caulk everything, and then we do drywall. In the end, we did use a product called Aero Barrier on the last house we did in that development. And that was our first ever net zero house, and it had solar on it. And the solar provided enough energy for the average user in the house.
How are these houses scaling now? Are they around the same size, or is the square footage increasing?
We still do a 500 square foot model. We have a 600 square foot model. We have an 800 square foot model, and we have a 1,000 square foot model. We really are targeting a demographic that big demographic shift that's happened in housing over the last couple decades. You know, after World War II, people came home from the war and they had kids. And so the three bedroom, two bath kind of permeated the building at that time. And we still have a lot of that. At that time, you know, it was about 40%, 50% of households were, you know, up to four people like that. Now, when you look at it, it's almost like 80% of households are one or two people. So our houses are meant for that. They're meant for a starter home. A lot of people use them as, you know, if they're just trying to scale down. We have a lot of retired folks that will move into one of our homes and sell their bigger homes, and they have a little bit more money for retirement. But yeah, we've stayed on the small size. We're not as small as the tiny houses on wheels that we used to build, but yeah, we're mostly under 1,000 square feet.
That's amazing. And I think that's big, because obviously it all contributes to the overall size of, you know, how energy is actually used and how it's saved. And I think this sustainability conversation is incredible, and how you guys are bringing that is, you know, it's very clear to me and hopefully the audience as well. But now I kind of want to jump into a little bit more about you and, you know, how your role splits, you know, between like day-to-day operations. You have, you know, design decisions, you have, I guess, investor relations, you know, how does that all work kind of through, you know, Hiatus Capital Fund and, you know, the actual building business as well?
Yeah, sure. So after we did, I was a general contractor. I had a general contracting business for the first two developments we did. That first one I mentioned, and also another one we did, which was 10 houses that were around 1,000 square feet. Pretty quickly, it was apparent to me that this housing type, there was a real need for it in the market, and so I wanted to do, you know, as many of these as we could do. And of course, I ran into financing as being one of the most difficult things to try to figure out. That first development, I met my now business partner, Ryan, and he was working at a private lending fund for builders. You know, and I went to them and said, hey, this is my concept, this is what I want to do. And the owner of that fund said, hey, we can't give you any money, but I have a really smart guy that I work with, and he can help you out. And that was Ryan. So I'd buy Ryan lunch. His friend Jeff was there too. And I'd buy those guys lunch. And they got out a Performa, which I'd never even heard of. I didn't know what a Performa was. And they went through the project and did a Performa, and they patted me on the back and they said, you got to raise $1 million. And then, you know, you'll be able to purchase your land. You'll be able to pay for the lot creation. And then once you have that, you can get construction loans on each of the lots. That took a long time. That was like a 3 or 4 year process to get through that. After that happened, I was about to, you know, return those original friends and family investors their money. And they'd made a really good profit. Like some of those people doubled their money. So I went to Ryan. I said, hey, man, I want to do a bunch of these. Like, yeah, I know you've done, you know, these construction funds. Could we do a construction fund that's based around this type of housing? He saw the returns and he said, yeah, I think we can do that. So we went to one of our local breweries and we made out two checks to our investors. One was the principal, the original money they had put in the project, and the other was their profit. And then the third thing in that package was a little booklet that described this construction fund that we have called the Hiatus Capital Fund. That fund now has about $8 million in it. There's 60 people, and we have four projects that we're working through in that fund.
That's amazing. And I think a big key to that is that we're seeing a rising demand for, you know, smaller, more sustainable housing, like you're mentioning. And, you know, especially in like Pacific Northwest is like what I've been kind of seeing now. So, I mean, in your view, what's driving that trend?
I mean, I think a lot of it's the demographics that I mentioned before, that, you know, there's just people don't need as big of a house. There's just not as many people that need larger homes. So, so I think that's part of it. Affordability is a big issue. So, you know, when we look at a lot now, if we get the density that we're allowed, especially in Bend, we can just put more homes on the lot. So, you know, a lot of these towns are looking at like, hey, how can we have more houses in our towns? And you either need more land or you need to build on the land that's within your city limits. And, you know, we really specialize in, you know, what they call urban infill. And I think it works really good for cities to look at this type of thing, because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't change the neighborhood as much as a, you know, large apartment building that goes in and takes the whole block over, and, you know, it's five stories and it's really disruptive to the neighborhood. The ADU works really good. You know, now in Bend, we can do two ADUs, accessory dwelling units, behind a house. And when you're walking down the street, you know, you got to kind of look around the corner of the first house and you can kind of see a couple houses in the back, but it doesn't totally change the fabric of the neighborhood. So I think that's why it's been pretty popular and is gaining a lot of momentum. You know, we now do what we call is a feasibility service. So we basically, if you have a piece of land and you're living somewhere where you think you can do some cottages, you get a hold of us and we look at the land, we make a site map. We contact civil engineer to get some of the utility plans. We then talk with a horizontal contractor to get some rough numbers on what it'll cost to make the lots, and then we know how much our houses cost to build. And then we do a pro forma, and then we can tell a person like, hey, if you want to do one of these projects, this is what it looks like financially. We even now help with capital funding. We can do anything from, you know, Ryan can set up the legal entity that you need. If you have a few investors that you already know and you guys just need to figure out how to do that, we're able to do that. And then also set up funds if there's a city that, you know, a developer wants to try to do what we did here in Bend. We know how to help with that and do the webinars and do the investor closing and do the investor reporting and all. We're just working at trying to expand this as much as we can. We really believe in it, and we think it's not the only solution to the housing crisis, but we think it's one of them for sure.
That's amazing. And I think part of the housing crisis, you obviously have to think of things like policies around, you know, ADU zoning or, you know, land use. You know, have any of those kind of affected your ability to build and, I guess, scale?
Oh, yeah, hugely. It wouldn't be, I always say that it was just blind luck that I happened to be from Bend, Oregon, and came back to try to do this, because Oregon and specifically Bend has been really in the forefront of trying to have this type of housing. You know, 2015 was a long time ago. That was 10 years ago. And, you know, Bend wrote into their code, the cottage code that allowed, you know, that first development. Since then, the state of Oregon has had a lot of different legislation that they've done to try to help with what, you know, what we now call middle housing, you know, that's really specific for that kind of middle income person, the average salary worker. This is your nurse, your, you know, fireman here in Bend, you know, people working up in the mountain, that sort of thing. House Bill 2001, which was passed in Oregon, that legalized this middle housing types, which are duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, and cottage clusters. So all of a sudden on that residential lot where I was saying you could only have one residential house, now all of a sudden all of those lots, you're allowed to now build, you know, a duplex, a triplex, a quadplex, or a cottage. The duplexes and the triplexes and the quadplexes in Bend don't have to have shared walls, so you can actually have individual units. Then after that, Senate Bill 458 was passed, and that was a big deal too, because then now with those houses that we were able to build, we could then split them up and they could be on their own lots, and you could sell, if you had a fourplex, you could sell each of those lots and those houses individually. The state's still going. We have some legislation that's proposed this year, House Bill 2138. I call this one the gap closer. This is the one that like really brings it all together. It expands housing into unincorporated urban areas. And it also, one of the big things is it limits the ability of an HOA and CCNRs to not allow this type of housing. So might be some legal battles that happen with some of the golf courses around here, but we'll see. We'll try to put some houses in there. So I would say, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in a city that doesn't have any of this, definitely, you know, just making this stuff legal so that you can do it in the city is the first step, or you can't even do it. So, but we're seeing that happen in, you know, all across the U.S., not just Oregon.
That's amazing. And I think that translates into what you talk about online a lot, or also like with Hiatus, is you emphasize intentional living. So I think that's a great context, but I guess what does that mean in the context of how you build and sell homes? I'm sure most people can kind of come around to their own conclusions, but in your own words, I think it'll mean something a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I mean, intentional living for me, I live in one of our units. I have a daughter, you know, I have a 1,000 square foot, 2-bedroom, 2-bath house that's about 3 blocks away from where I grew up. And, you know, it's a very simple house. I don't have a lot of stuff. And, you know, here in Bend, we have a lot of outdoor activities. And, you know, I just don't think I personally need, you know, that much square footage. And I think there's a lot of people like that. So the intentional living for me is, you know, it's about what you need and what makes you happy. A lot of our developments are meant for you to know your neighbor, you know, like there's pathways that go through the development. So when you're going to your house, you see your neighbor and you wave to him. You know, a lot of the housing developments you see, you drive down the street, you go into your garage, you walk into your backyard and you don't even see your neighbor, you know? And I think that that's caused a lot of problems with communities where you're not seeing as much cohesion because people just don't know each other. So that's part of the intentionality. And then I think the intentionality of, you know, trying to care about what's going on in the environment as well. There's all kinds of waste that comes from building, and then just your utilities, trying to heat up a really big house just is worse for greenhouse gases. So there's a lot there, you know, but and everybody can choose to live in whatever kind of house they want. This is just how I think I want to live. And there happens to be other people out there that agree with me.
That's an amazing mindset. I like that a lot, actually. And while we're on the topic of sustainability of these homes, I'm kind of wondering, like, how do you measure the success of a project? Is it, you know, sure, purely ROI? Is there other metrics that you care about just as much?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I'm headed down to San Luis Obispo tomorrow for what's called the Small Scale Developer Forum. That they came to Bend. It's a big forum of all of these people that are doing small scale development. Now that can be like the kind of cottages we do. That could be, you know, like a urban infill project. And it was really interesting when they came to Bend. All of a sudden, I found my people. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys are doing the same stuff and care about the same stuff. And you know, I called everybody from the forum just to talk to them before I get down there. And I finally figured out like what one of the things that really brings us together and makes us common in development is we do care about capital and we do care about the return on investment because, you know, we're not a nonprofit organization. We really would like to have this be something that works in the market. We think that if you can make it profitable, then you're just going to see more of it. So, you know, we try to do this affordable by design, which is really difficult. And I can talk more about how that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But I realized with all these other developers, these small scale developers, we care about what's going into the community and what the end result of these developments are. I want to be proud when it takes so long and so much effort and blood, sweat, and tears to get find the land, get the money, you know, build the homes, sell the homes, return the investment. You really want to, when you walk through that house and walk through that community, be really proud of it, you know. And mm-hmm. I live in Bend and I'm going to live here my whole life. So I want to be adding to the community and, you know, making something that I can be proud of, my kids can be proud of. And so I think there is a little bit of a difference in the, you know, the people that are doing this. Now, we've had really profitable developments. We're, you know, right now is a really difficult time, though. The last 2 years have been real tough. The interest rates have gone up. We've seen sales slow down a lot. Inflation has happened. The cost of materials is going up. So, you know, it's difficult, too. And you have to be able to ride through these cycles. So, we care about profit, but we also care about, you know, the lasting effects of what we're building as well.
That's amazing. I think that's great too, because you're right. You see a lot of businesses come into business when things are, you know, going very well. But once the markets dip and, you know, like there's a couple more, you know, hurdles to get over, that's when you see a lot of them have to fall off. So especially in a time like that, it makes me wonder what's been working really well for you over the last, you know, 12, 18 months. What's helping you stay afloat?
Yeah. I mean, I think the interesting thing to talk about is really the high performance elements in the homes. You know, when the market was as Ryan likes to call it, frothy. You know, in Bend, it was crazy. Like, you know, homes would have bidding wars, and COVID really affected places like Bend, where you had a lot of remote workers. And as the interest rates went up and materials got expensive, and buyers became even more price sensitive when they're looking at homes, one of the first things that, unfortunately, that kind of falls to the wayside is things like, you know, putting money into your solar array or putting money into the efficiency of your home. People are just looking at that bottom dollar cost of how much is my mortgage going to be every month. So we've had to look at our own homes. And, you know, we now have like kind of what we call a good, better, best. There's a certain level of efficiency that we just won't go below because we just don't believe in it. You know, so our good is, you know, we're lucky in that we're building smaller homes, which is one of the best things you can do for efficiency. But yeah, you know, we looked at stuff like our heat pump hot water heaters and some of our smaller units. Those things are, you know, $2,000 versus $500. So we've given that as an option for people that we're building if they want to try to build something a little bit cheaper, but we still seal our, you know, we still do air sealing. We still, our insulation is above code. So we still, believe in that efficiency, but, it's much harder to find buyers that, that care as much about, the efficiencies. You don't see a lot of those efficiency things, you know, elements, you don't really see those in the home. They're behind the walls, you know, so it's not like, oh, this home has a new hot tub. You really have to educate people on what that efficiency means for the utility costs, what it means for the environment. We have a couple of really good programs, in Oregon. We have Energy Trust of Oregon. They're an incentive program. So if your house is above code, they give you a little bit of money back, which is nice. That usually covers, you know, the energy modeling that you do with the house. It covers the verifier that comes out and does the blower door test to test it. So there's, you know, one of the other things in Bend, when we started doing this, there was no way for us to compare. It was hard for us to compare our homes and their efficiency to other homes on the market. The MLS wouldn't even let us publish our EPS score, which was the score we were getting from Energy Trust of Oregon. Now we have a home energy score that's required by every house that's on our market now has to have a home energy score, and they go from 0 to 10. So our homes are a 10, you know, an average production home might be like a 6 or a 7. So now at least there's something for buyers to look at and go like, okay, I can compare these houses apples to apples.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned earlier that you were maybe not necessarily surprised, but you were noticing that there's a lot of more elderly people that are, you know, moving into these homes. But in terms of buyers, like we're talking about, what kinds of buyers are surprising you the most? Are there new demographics other than, you know, maybe the older people getting into small home ownership?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most surprising thing to me in that first development and in some of our other developments is like the net worth of some of these buyers that, you know, buy our homes and that's their primary residence. They're not buying it as an investment property. They just wanted to downsize and they wanted to live in a community like Bend. So they sold their big home that took a lot for them to you know, take care of. And then they bought a smaller home, you know, and I think that was surprising to see, you know, people that had the funds to be able to definitely buy kind of any house they wanted. And they were choosing to buy an energy efficient smaller home. So that was pretty surprising to me, I guess. I thought it'd be all millennials, you know, that are like, yeah, we're so cool. We're living in a small house, but yeah, we have those too, but not as much.
Fair enough. And I guess that kind of leads into the next segment that I have, because I come from a marketing background and I'm currently running a revenue optimization agency. So my question is always, how are you guys doing your outreach? How are you getting your customers? Where are they coming from? And, you know, how are they finding out about you?
Yeah, there's several things that we try to do. I specifically try to do things like this, get on podcasts and, you know, talk about what we're doing. And we oftentimes get people from that will listen to a podcast and then get a hold of us. And that might be someone who has a piece of land and wants us to do a feasibility study. It might be someone who, you know, wants to do this in their own town and they want advice on talking to the city council. So that's what I do. And then I go to like the, you know, the developer forums and stuff. Those are really helpful. But specifically on the technology side, you know, we do a lot of we do a lot of social media. Now we're on Instagram, and we write blogs. We try to do do a blog once a month on a really specific topic that we think we know about, you know, that's not being covered by other people. This last blog I wrote was about these house bills I was just talking about. I'm trying to explain them. They're so confusing that you know, it felt like I needed to like try to describe it to even just to other developers so that they can understand it. We do these things called hiatus hangouts, which we just go down to like a, you know, brewery or whatever, and we invite people from the city, people from the community, our investors, and it's real casual. We don't have a speech or anything. We just all kind of have some beers and we start chatting, and the greatest conversations come out of those hangouts. You know, it's like the water cooler talk kind of thing. The marketing real early on, a really good friend who helped us start out with the marketing, helped with kind of what our brand would look like and that sort of stuff, was really helpful, because we can kind of have a cohesive look when we're publishing stuff. But and then I would say the other thing is I really believe in visuals and renderings. Oftentimes we're doing stuff that hasn't been done before, and you can't describe it to people. People don't understand what a 500 square foot house looks like or what a community of them looks like. So, you know, before we had anything built or before we build anything, we have what I think are really beautiful renderings. Sean, who works with us, he's our design director and architect. We'll work together on, you know, if we have a new model we're trying to do, we will render it and make it look beautiful so we can go out and describe it and really show people. I think that's a really important thing too for people who are trying to do this in a community that hasn't seen smaller homes or infill houses, you know, being able to get some visuals of what you're trying to do, to be able to show to potential investors, potential buyers, and especially to your city councilors and the people that are going to make the decisions to decide whether you can build what you want to build in your municipality.
That's amazing. And I'd love for you to share with me like the website, or if there's a separate area where we can put that in description, let people really see what it is that you're building and
hiatushomes.com, you know, hiatus, like you're on a hiatus from your work. That's our main website that has most of our projects on it. And then, if people are really interested, we have a, you know, whether it's feasibility or capital raising, we have some decks that I, you know, just email me. I'm on our website, jesse@hiatushomes.com. I'm always happy to get on and chat with anybody, even if they're just like starting out or have questions about their own city, or I really believe in this stuff, and it's all about trying to educate people and get the word out. So yeah, happy to chat with anybody that has questions.
That's amazing. That's what we're trying to do here as well. So yeah, I think it's a great little connection here. But I think nothing is worth anything unless you're not looking at the future, right? So I think I'd love to ask, fast forward maybe 6-12 months, you know, what's your next major focus? Is it, you know, expansion, maybe policy engagement or like capital raising? What does that look like?
Yeah, over the next year, we have we kind of have a couple different major things that we're doing. The capital fund is closed. We're not raising any more money in that. But we're starting to do some smaller projects that are just our hiatus's own projects. We have a 7-lot one that we just went into due diligence on the land that's here. We're raising about $650,000 in equity through equity partnerships to do that that project. And that'll be specific just to that project. We'll raise the money, we'll build the homes, sell them, and then distribute the profits. So that's a big thing we're doing. And then we have our fund projects. We're in the middle of our 9th Street project, which is 9 homes. They're twin homes. We call them twin homes. Under code, it would really be an attached ADU. So you get a 1-bedroom unit, and then above the garage is a lofted ADU. That'll be the model home will be done next month, and we'll be on the tour of homes here. And so that's a big thing that's going on this summer. And then we've got several projects using this this new middle housing land division, which is allowing you to build a few homes on a lot and then divide them. We'll be starting. We're starting a 4-unit project that we just got through the due diligence period, and then we've got a couple more of those. So Yeah, staying busy.
That's amazing. And I think that's actually a good way to kind of lead into the next question. But it's also like the last thing I like to ask. And I think it brings a lot of great ideas. But if you could wave a wand and fix one structural issue, whether it's policy, construction, finance, anything that's really slowing your momentum, I guess, you know, what would that
absolutely.
Be? What would your magic wish be?
That's an easy answer. It's all of the complexity of building permits through municipalities. You know, this is I don't mind mentioning what my politics are, but I'm a pretty left-wing you know, I don't know if I call myself a Democrat, but I'm definitely on that side of things. And I definitely believe about, you know, caring about people that I don't know and having the support of the government for that. However, we've just become so bloated with complexity. So it makes it really, really difficult to try to get building permits and to try to do what we're doing. You know, I read Ezra Klein's abundance book, and I just think he put it really well. You know, we need to be looking at, like, what's the end result? The end result is housing, and that's what we want. Okay, let's back up. Like, what are the problems, and what are we running into with that? We've tried to come up with so many different policies and laws to make sure that we don't build a building wrong, that we can't even build buildings anymore. The you know he talks about the bullet train in California and the debacle of trying to build that thing, and a lot of good affordable housing examples. And one that I thought was really accurate is that, like, you know, they're looking at building this affordable housing apartment. It's next to a freeway, so the air handler system that had to go into that apartment was so expensive that they couldn't build the building. So you know, the houseless people are sleeping in a tent under that freeway, and they're huffing all those fumes. But, you know, those guys couldn't build the building because of the all of the layers of requirements that are on top of that stuff. So I would wave a wand and I would say, let's look at the end result we want, the house that we want, and then let's back up and let's get rid of a lot of the barriers that are holding us back, that are just paper pushing barriers.
Exactly. That's amazing. Just make it as seamless as possible. Why all the regulation and have a little bit more of an easier process? That's fantastic. Yeah. And I think that's a great note. So thanks everybody for listening. This was Jesse Russell from Hiatus Homes, sharing insight not just on how to build sustainable homes, but how to rethink the communities we live in and the financial models that support them. If you want to learn more, head to hiatushomes.com. You'll find all their info, designs, investment fund, and upcoming projects. And you can even watch more episodes like this by subscribing to Off the Grid on the Record on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Jesse, for being here, and we'll catch you next time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.